Welcome everyone to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is February 22nd, 2018. We've got three bills on the docket this morning, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1525. Cassie, could you please read us the summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1525 exempts child caring agencies that provide adoption placement services but do not provide care to children and do not receive public funds from the requirement to provide financial statements that have been reviewed by an independent certified public accountant. The fiscal impact is no impact and the revenue impact is no impact. The Senate floor vote was 25-0 with 5 excused.
Okay, may I have a motion? Vice Chair Sanchez.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 1525 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 1525 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? I'll just remind everyone that the child care, the adoption agencies kind of got swept up in something that we passed recently, and it was unintentional, and this is purely a technical fix. We've got Cynthia Stinson in DHS if I misstated anything or if there are any questions about this. Okay, seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Forsyth.
Yes.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Peluso.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Sanchez.
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer.
Aye. And Rep. Olson is excused. With that, the motion passes. And Representative Stark, would you like to be the chair?
Sure.
Fantastic. Okay. I close the work session on Senate Bill 1525. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1526. Cassie, please read the summary.
Senate Bill 1526A prohibits the court from considering a parent's disability when determining the termination of parental rights unless the parent's disability-related conduct renders the parent incapable of providing care to a child or ward for an extended period of time. The measure requires the court to consider the mental health condition of parents when determining whether to terminate parental rights if the nature and duration renders the parent incapable of giving proper care for the child or ward for an extended period of time. The measure declares emergency, effective on passage. There's a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and the Senate floor vote was 25-0 with 5 excused.
Okay, may I have a motion?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 1526-A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 1526 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We had a good, robust hearing about this. I see Bob Jundeff from Disability Rights Oregon in the audience. If there are any questions, this was unanimous out of the Senate. Okay, seeing no discussion, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Forsyth.
Yes.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Peluso.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Sanchez.
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer.
Aye. Okay. Senate Bill 1526 is adopted. passes.
No way.
And who would like to be the carrier for this one?
I'll do it.
Great. Representative Peluso will be the carrier, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1526. And I would like to know if there's a motion to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Vice Chair Olson to vote on Senate Bill 1525. So moved. Is that good enough?
Denied.
Denied.
Oh, sorry.
Request denied.
Okay. All in favor of suspending the rules to allow Representative Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson, how do you vote on Senate Bill 1525?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Wow, that's cool.
I'm gonna hit it a couple times. I'm not sure what I was supposed to do. Open, close, accept your vote. Okay, can we stand at ease, please, for 1 minute? Readjourn us and open a work session on Senate Bill 1540. Jessie, could you please read the summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1540A modifies the definition of abuse for the purpose of mandatory reporting of child abuse to not include any sexual contact or intercourse between a child over age 12 and a person under 21 if the person is not 3 years older than the child and sexual contact is not the result of force, intimidation, or coercion. The measure also includes provisions related to child abuse investigations conducted on school premises and also modifies definitions of adult, community health program, and sexual abuse for the purposes of abuse reporting for adults with mental illness or developmental disabilities. On the Senate Bill 1540A, the fiscal is indeterminate, the revenue is no impact, and the Senate floor vote was 16 aye, 11 nay, 3 excused. We have an A4 amendment. The A4 amendment replaces the measure and specifies requirements for Department of Human Services to improve management of child welfare services, improve recruitment and retention of foster parents, and address staffing issues. The dash A4 makes changes to the Cigarette Tax Act to appropriate money to DHS to carry out the specified requirements. We have an A5 that creates new provisions to the measure that are similar to the A4 amendments. The A7 amendments changes the age of consensual sexual contact from 12 years of age to 14 years of age and includes physicians and nurses within the exemption from duty to report if communication by a person is privileged under state law. The A8 amendments removes the definition modifications for the term abuse for mandatory reporting of child abuse.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the dash 8 amendments into this House bill. the Senate bill.
Okay. Representative Olson moves that we adopt the dash 8s into Senate Bill 1540. The dash 8 is dated probably 221. 220. 2018. Discussion about the dash 8s.
Well, Madam Chair, I really do appreciate where the direction on this bill. There are clearly some pieces you and I've talked about, and I think everybody else has here too as well. There are some sections in this bill we most definitely need to have. The section one, as we listened to the testimony Tuesday, there were some concerns about the age issue. It seems to continue to just linger about that issue. I actually like the idea what you and I talked about the other day about, let's get together and have a work group and during the interim and just try to kind of figure out where we land on this. By moving forward the dash 8s, we get ourselves that opportunity to do that, and we don't move forward with section 1 of the bill.
Okay. I think I'll engage in the discussion at this point, and I know there'll be lots of other voices. So to remind the committee, the Section 1 came about because the law has not changed recently in this regard, but the Oregon law says, and I hope I'm getting this right, that age of consent is 18. And the Salem-Keizer School District, perhaps because of some incident that had happened there, I'm not totally sure why, but ended up coming up with some laws, and I'm going to look at Lori and see, am I getting this right? Came up with policies that said, we believe that because the age of consent for any sexual activity in Oregon is 18, that because there is not consent under the age of 18, then that is now characterized as child abuse, and as such, everyone who's a mandatory reporter needs to report any kind of sexual activity that they either witness or hear about. So there was a concern among students and teachers in the Salem-Keizer School District that this seemed like a really dramatic change, that all of a sudden, if any kissing happened at school dances or teachers were even, because they're mandatory reporters, had their daughter in the basement, walked in on them kissing, that all of a sudden these became now mandatory reporting requirements. And if you don't follow through with mandatory reporting requirements, then you would be subject to the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission, and you could possibly have your license revoked, and it could be a violation. So the concerns with that are both that kids who might want to go to a teacher and talk about starting to engage in sexual activity and have a trusted adult in their life be able to talk through some of these things, this might have a very chilling effect on those kind of relationships, because now the teacher would be obligated to report that. So I think there was a lot of, at least from that school district, a lot of very strong support that at the high school level, this seemed like really a really broad brush and would have that chilling effect, could possibly have that chilling effect, and could damage relationships or hinder relationships where people could be able to talk this out. And in addition to that, there's been a concern about the CPS lines, the child abuse hotline that's handled by CPS, would suddenly have to handle all of these calls. It's not clear whether they would have to refer that or not, because, and I've had different opinions about that in the last 48 hours, because now all of a sudden we are defining sexual activity as sexual abuse, there is an interpretation that CPS would then have to open an investigation. So at the very least, I think there's wide agreement that the CPS lines, the child abuse line, would all of a sudden potentially get flooded with the kind of calls that are very innocent sexual activity. And again, well, I shouldn't use the word innocent, but things that would not most, I think the standard would be most people would not characterize this as abuse, if you think back on when your first dating was. So I think there was wide activity on that particular piece, which is what Section 1 has been trying to address. The section, the bill was amended in the Senate to lower the age from 14, which is what the original bill had, to 12, because the standard practice that is backed up by OHA guidelines that have been in effect for 20 years and were reaffirmed in 2015 was that the age should be 12, where people, medical professionals, do not have to mandatory report because it's really important for them to be able to talk. So the discrepancy here and the turmoil that people have had, good people on all sides who really care about this issue, is particularly around school districts and middle school, should they be mandatory reporters, and anyone that sees any kind of sexual activity, because of the concern that teachers might not be able to identify subtle forms of coercion, you know, should they have to do a mandatory reporting, or again, does that have the chilling effect, the other unintended consequences? So on one side, you do the mandatory reporting because you're worried that people might fall through the cracks, teachers might not recognize what could potentially be abuse. On the other side, you've got concerns about these chilling effect on conversations with trusted people if all of a sudden they have to go report this, and flooding CPS lines and investigations when we know, and we just had the Secretary of State's audit that talks about how overloaded our system is and we need to support it. So that is the context for those of you, some of you have really dived into this, and some of you may not have done that so much, but that has been the angst around this. So I've had a lot of really excellent talks with Senator Gelser, who brought the bill, Representative Bill Post, who had put his name on as a chief sponsor and brought Section 1 forward to begin with, Representative Noble, Vice Chair Olson, in particular, around, how do we get at this more nuanced age? And you heard testimony from Allison Kelly from Liberty House, who has come before this committee a lot, and I believe we all hold in very high regard, who has concerns about the 12 to 13-year-olds and leans toward mandatory reporting because of concern about people falling through the cracks. I talked to Kevin Dowling from CARES Northwest in my area, Portland, who feels that 12 is the appropriate age. Both of them recognize the nuances in between and say their own child abuse community is somewhat split about this. The Oregon Abuse Advocates and Survivors in Service still sticks with the age of 12 because of the concern about the chilling effect. The Sexual Abuse Task Force sticks with the age 12. The some of the people that spoke to us initially. I went back, circled back with them, and said, after you heard from the DA who's on the Multidisciplinary Child Abuse Task Force and the Liberty House director, do you feel differently about it? So I had those conversations, talked with Lori Satinspiel, talked with DOJ, had a lot of conversations. One of the things that, there's a couple of things that have led me to the feeling that the Dash 8 is not good, is that up until this past year, we haven't had a lot of discussion on this, but now because of the interpretation that teachers do have to be mandatory reporters, starting in Salem-Keizer, now going to Medford and Ashland, I think, and probably other schools, once they see that some schools have interpreted this, they're worried about their liability. It's likely to go on. And so the consequences to me of not clarifying the law in this regard are really significant. And the other piece that really swayed me to thinking it is important to keep Section 1 in is that that schools, and I have spoken with Lori Satinspiel and DOJ about this, the mandatory reporting requirements that we have set the floor of what's required. So school districts actually have the ability, if they see it, they want a different policy from middle school than high school, that they can set the standard at somewhere else, that they can actually require mandatory reporting. They may say, rather than call CPS, go to a confidential school counselor. They may have a different set of guidelines that they want, but they can have that discussion at the local level. And this would mean that if someone broke their guideline, they would be subject to the whatever the HR disciplinary action is. They would not be subject to the statutory requirement that sends them to the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission and puts their license at risk. Again, this could be for something like watching people kissing. You know, you wouldn't want a license at risk for that kind of thing. So those are the reasons that I've really agonized about this and came out feeling that we should support the bill as is. It's actually less of a departure from what has been practiced in the past, I think, than the direction that the schools, that now three school districts have taken, which is pretty significant, and we have yet to really know what the fallout of that could be. It's since October. Representative Vice Chair Olson mentioned a work group. I do think that this, I take to heart the concerns that Allison Kelly and the DA and members who have come and talked to me about this have about wanting to catch sexual activity that could be abusive and that is not obvious on the surface as abusive as early as we can, because we know that when those things don't get caught and they're not prevented and not intervened with, they can lead to a lifetime of domestic violence and abuse, and I take that very, very seriously. So I, regardless of what happens with this bill, I'm very committed to calling together a work group. I did not want to have this as an amendment and send it to Ways and Means, where all of the really good work in this bill, I think there's no argument at all around Sections 2 and 3. There's a lot of support. It does very important cleanup on things that needed to be worked on. It would really be a travesty if this bill did not pass. And so anything that would put it on a track to Ways and Means and add a fiscal to it did not make sense. But I've run a lot of work groups that didn't go through Ways and Means, that where I just say, hey, I've found a room. Will you come and join me? And I know Allison Kelly has said she, as the chair of that child abuse centers network, would love to play a really strong hand in helping either chair or, you know, really drive that conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the groups that had testified here, the healthcare community, the educators community, and that includes OEA, OSBA, COSA, the law enforcement, DHS, all of the obvious partners and any others that you might think of will be invited. And I want it bipartisan, bicameral, and I really look forward, because I think it's very important that we take a really strong look. There's a variety of different things that have emerged, including the audit, that really point to the need for a comprehensive approach to how do we prevent and intervene early in child abuse in Oregon.
Representative Wolfhead.
Yes.
I appreciate the motion, and thank you, Chair, for your explanation. We have had some long discussions, and I appreciate that. I do support Senator Gelster's Dash 8, and I do appreciate you offering the work group. I think, as you mentioned, there's a lot of differing opinions on where this should go. My background in law enforcement, my initial reaction is that we should always be casting the net wider as opposed to narrower. But I think that we need to talk about this and what the implications of that are on the system and on the children. So I do support Representative Olson's motion.
Okay. Any other discussion on this? Okay. Oh, yes.
So my concern about removing that section in the first place is that over and over again, we set up laws or procedures, policies, and whatnot in different systems, in particular school systems, and in child welfare, that once those get changed for reasons that are appropriate and real, then people don't, they ask the question again, wait, what rule am I following? And so my concern is this is an existing process. Mm-hmm. We do know what it is. It is about interpretation, and we want to clarify that interpretation. But if we keep changing the rules and not really solidifying and holding them, then that gives more opportunity for confusion. And let me tell you, children, in my opinion, in particular middle schoolers, can take a rumor and run with it so fast. And I am so very worried about them doing that and not talking. And not talking about the issues that they're struggling with, that they don't know who to talk to. In particular, if family's not in a great position, and I understand very clearly that there are a lot of kids who have no clue at 14 years old what any kind of sexual activity might be. But sadly enough, there are a lot of kids who do. And those are the kids that I think really deserve the attention and time of anyone in either their schools or whatever, whatever system they touch, to be able to have somebody they can talk to and not be afraid to talk to that person. So I want to clarify this. I want to make sure that that teachers are clear that, these are set standards. Let's just make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to go along with what Representative Sanchez was saying, students are under incredible stress, and there's a lot of trauma. And we know that many times those students are not getting what they need. And so I think we should do everything we can not to drive another wedge between their potential reaching out to an important person in their life, like a teacher. And that's why I'm not supportive of of the changes.
I'm going to stand at ease for 1 minute. Reconvene, reopen the work session on Senate Bill 1540. Are there any other comments on the Dash 8, right? Proposed amendment. Mm-hmm. Okay, seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Orsic?
No.
Representative Meek?
Nay.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
No.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
No.
Chair Kendire?
No. The amendment is not adopted. Is there any other consideration of any other amendments? Seeing none, can I have a motion on the bill? Not sure if we did it out of order by doing the amendment. I think that didn't matter.
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move Senate Bill 1540 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves Senate Bill 1540A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Yes.
Chair Kinney-Geyer. My apologies that I missed the original hearing on this, but just wanted to add a couple things. And just in this conversation, I'm hearing, you know, talk about that people might end up reporting, you know, a couple 13-year-olds kissing, sort of thing. I struggle with that. I think that for that to be the case, you know, on line 19, and it calls out ORS 163.305, which is very clear about the definition of sexual contact and the touching of intimate parts. So for someone to wrap that into it, you know, seems like a big, in my opinion, a stretch. I don't foresee those being reported. And, you know, just from a very practical level, I understand that all these bills that we have are so nuanced and so therefore they're complicated. I understand the need to do something. But, you know, I 12 years old, that's a sixth grader. I have 2 sixth graders right now. And I can't fathom that they, without having had, you know, exposure that wasn't appropriate, that they, at their age, would be in a sexual relationship without it being problematic. And so it feels to me that if we say age 12 for the mandatory reporting, it, to me it feels like we're saying that age, that sex at age 12 is okay. And so I just can't go there. So I understand that's not what people are, I understand, right, that's not what people are declaring. But when you put a minimum, right, you know, it's like the speed limit. You put a minimum and everyone thinks you have to drive that speed.
Well, so a couple things. One is the discussion about what are intimate parts came up, and the example given was tongues are considered intimate. So French kissing would be included in here. I think there's been a lot of conversation also, and I'm sorry for your family loss that you had to miss some of this. But the, you know, people have said over and over again, this, by putting the age at 12, does not say that we think that sexual contact is appropriate. What it's saying is we're not putting it in the abuse category, where, and if somebody is starting down a sexual contact path and wants to talk to a trusted person in their life as opposed to involving law enforcement or child protective services, that might be the better way. So I want to make sure that it's very, very clear as we go into this argument that no sides impugn each other on this. I think that there's been really good conversation about how do we make sure that people who are starting down a path, that we keep that path as healthy as possible. And that we help children define what are healthy, intimate relationships with people that they are attracted to, as opposed to abusive relationships. I believe that everyone here has that at their heart, and those that support keeping Section 1 in feel very strongly that if kids are starting down a path, they're worried about the chilling effect. I believe that we are all worried about the same thing, and I'm very hopeful that this work group can bring people together around that common ground. So I just want to make sure that you've been part of that conversation, because in no way are people just saying, oh, that's totally fine. But I do think, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with people about, well, when's the first time you kissed your boyfriend? And yeah, I will admit right here on the record, it was 13 for me. And it wasn't an abusive relationship. It was, I won't go into detail, but yeah, I've had a lot of conversations, and you can ask Bill Post when his first one was. So anyway, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if my statements a moment ago, it all sounded as though I was impugning people. That was not my.
No, I didn't mean to do that. I just want to make sure that we, as this conversation goes forward, that it continues with the respect that I think that we've had, that we really care about what do you do if you're concerned that kids are possibly going down the wrong path. And, you know, I didn't say it in this. I think it gives me an opportunity to say what I think I'm missing, which is that any mandatory reporter should always report anything that they're concerned about. This is just saying that it's not mandatory for any kind of sexual contact, but anytime there's any concern, and this bill actually did, you know, I don't think that this came about as a result of this broad sense of underreporting all over. So I haven't heard that be a huge concern. It is a potential concern that Ron Noble has brought about. There may be underreporting. That's why I cast it wider, but then there's the other side of casting it wider, system impact and chilling effect. You know, so it's weighing those things, and I think it's something that work group will really try to wrestle with. There may be other guidelines that we want to come up with. You may want to look at a difference in age group from 3 to something lower for, you know, proportionately that 3 years is a bigger impact, bigger differentiation on a 12-year-old. Those are the things that I think that we should be looking at. And how do you equip mandatory reporters with more skills to use discretion if you're going to rely more on discretion? So, yeah.
Well, and so I appreciate what Representative Stark was saying. The one thing that that we need to remember, though, is that kids are not living in a bubble. And unfortunately, for better or for worse, they're surrounded by sexual messages all the time, in TV, in movies, in books, all sorts of stuff on the internet. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I think that can also cause kids to get involved in some of these things at a young age. So I think you have to always look for whether it's abuse or not, but it's just our weird culture is part of this as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Rep. Cheney Geyer. So I'll just be very, attempt to be concise and brief. For me, this bill, the districts, I think they're all very supportive of this because they recognize the vulnerabilities of our young people, and I think we need to really keep a close eye on that. I like what this bill does. It, for me, it puts the correct safeguards in place for that to take place. And please don't tell the world that I've said this about my daughter, but at 25, I would like to think she hasn't had sex as her mother. I know that's not true, but again, we have to face the reality that our youth are sexually active at a much younger age than most likely most of us. Mm-hmm. So it is a tough pill to swallow. But the reality is we still need to keep those kids safe and healthy and on the right pathway for success.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Forsyth?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Noble?
No.
Representative Peluso?
Yes.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. The motion passes. Unless anyone's fighting for it, I will.
Madam Chair, I just want to give notice for a minority report.
Okay. Notice accepted for a minority report. I will carry the bill on the floor. And the committee are. Let me close the public. I'm sorry, the work session on Senate Bill 1540. We've had a lot of really good ideas for informational hearings. We have 4 sessions left. My temperature read, having checked with my vice chairs, is it might be good to wait on the informational hearings until May and September. We've had a number of different ideas. Cassie, you want to let us know some of the ideas?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, some of the ideas that I have received and that the chair has received, one is economic development and affordable housing, which we'll be working with some of our colleagues and other committees to come up with some ideas of who we can invite to the committee to talk about that issue and work with Representative Noble on that as well. Earlier in session, we heard from Maxine Fitzpatrick of Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives on their Pathway 1000 report, having her come speak about that report and the activities that her organization are doing. An informational on TANF broadly. I believe there's going to be some work around that. ERDC and some of the changes that have happened, and then updates from DHS and OHCS on their activities and what's going on with their agencies.
Yeah, and particularly with DHS, you know, continuing to follow how Faribault is tracking what they're doing with relation to the Secretary of State audit. So we will continue having that right up front and center, and that's going to coincide with the work group that we have, and we'll make sure that those two things align, because I'm anticipating that we're going to want to bring legislation forward in 2019. So with that, I'm going to adjourn the committee for the rest of the session. Whoa. I'm sure you're all heartbroken, but I will be seeing you on the floor, and it's been wonderful working with you all. We're adjourned.